This is Mike Dot with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride.
Hi, and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, on this week's Relax Back UK show. This week's topic is one that is going to get more and more important. It's long COVID. I think that the effects will become more apparent as time goes on and more people are shown to have this disease. My guest is Dr. Judith Grant, who has been suffering the effects of long COVID for over 2 years now and has had to deal with many, many different symptoms from it.
It hurt to eat because my throat was so swollen, I couldn't swallow. And every time I tried to chew food, I was biting on the blisters in my mouth.
She talks about her initial COVID illness, how it led on to long COVID, some of the awful effects of this, and she really was put through the mill. She really has had a very tough time. However, it's not all doom and gloom, and there's light at the end of the tunnel for Judith.
I started to feel like myself again. Like, I felt like I'd come out of a dark cloud. Like, the brain fog for me really started to lift then. And once the brain fog lifted, my mood kind of improved.
So please do stay tuned and join me and Judith as she relives her 2 years of long COVID.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Dr. Judith Grant has had long COVID for 2 years and has had a very difficult time of it, but is starting to turn a bit of a corner in her recovery. She went through her experiences with me, but first, I just got her to introduce herself.
So I'm Dr. Judith Grant. I'm a doctor of occupational health psychology and management, so a PhD rather than an MD doctor. Although having caught COVID in March last year, I feel like my medical knowledge has, or March 2020, I should say, my medical knowledge has increased significantly with that. And so my background is workplace health and wellbeing. So I've worked for the last 20 years in various health and wellbeing roles within organisations, both with individuals and companies. My latest role is Director of Health and Wellbeing for a large construction consultancy organisation, which I'll be returning to next week, in fact.
Okay, all right. Well, that's exciting. Good luck with that. I hope that goes well. So how long have you actually been sick with long COVID?
25 months. So I fell ill the first week of March 2020. So before the lockdowns, when it was, COVID was still being kind of talked about in the media, but there was no sort of self-isolation, there were no tests. So it's very early days.
Yeah, all right. So over 2 years, so this just kind of underlines that, you know, long COVID is not a joke. This is 2 years of your life so far, and you're not free of the disease, are you? You are much better. You're able to go back to work, but you wouldn't say you are completely cured, or would you?
No. I mean, I guess when I thought about, you know, being off sick, I've always thought of return to work as the end goal. But in this case, and for a lot of long-term illnesses, going back to work is not the end goal. It's part of my recovery. And it may take, you know, who knows how long it will take me to fully recover, because long COVID and the mechanisms behind it are so poorly understood. You know, there are no like real treatments for it. You can treat some of the symptoms. So I have no idea when I might fully recover, but I'm so, so much better than I was. But saying that, I've had some pretty very, very low points. So sometimes I find it difficult to say how I'm doing, because I'm like, well, I'm not kind of at death's door where I feel like I have been. But then I almost forget how I was before. It's been going on so long.
Sure. All right. Let's go back to the beginning, if you can bear taking yourself back a couple of years.
Sorry.
Apologies if it's kind of too much. But is there a link between how bad the initial COVID is and long COVID? Because when you initially got COVID, were you laid out? Were you hospitalized? You know, were you kind of, because some people go to hospital, you know, they nearly die. Well, let's face it, a lot of people have died. Or for some people, it's just like, you know, a day in bed and off they go again.
I mean, I was pretty poorly. So I had a dry cough, I had fever, I had a hoarse voice, really bad earache for a couple of weeks, really fatigued. But I was kind of able to, you know, get out of bed and, I mean, and just sort of pot around my flat. And I had some wheezing, but I wasn't. I wasn't hospitalized, but actually there is no real link between whether you had a mild or moderate or a hospitalized case of COVID and long COVID. It seems to be quite random. And what I would say, what really frustrates me in the media is the kind of binary notion of COVID as being mild or a hospitalized case. I was really poorly, but at that time, the NHS wasn't scaled up to deal with all. I mean, at the time, they were starting to scale up to deal with the cases, but the NHS was overwhelmed. So they were only taking people in who were really, 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 really sick. Right. So maybe had I caught COVID a year later, say in March 2021, when the capacity was there in the health system, maybe I would have gone to hospital. But at that time, we were, you know, essentially left at home on our own, told just, you know, you didn't know what was going on in yourself, but you just told to stay at home. And that's pretty terrifying.
Right. Goodness. All right. So you had this initial 2 weeks. Then presumably kind of the worst of that 2 weeks was over. I can see you're disagreeing. Go, jump in. Please do jump in.
It is a long story. So, I mean, the worst of those 2 weeks. So after 2 weeks, at the end of it, I thought, oh, OK, I think I'm feeling a bit better. And lockdown, I think, had just happened then. So me and my friends, we got on a call, you know, a Zoom call to catch up. And I thought, fantastic. You know, that's over. Phew. Monday, I went back to work. Half a day, I sweat through my clothes, and then I fell even more ill. So my voice got even more hoarse, and the fatigue kicked in. It wasn't until like 5 weeks into the illness. So by this point, I'd been off 5 weeks when my breathing became a real issue. So I started getting really wheezy again. I was still fatigued. One night, I really, really was struggling to breathe. So I phoned 111, as the NHS advice was. And, you know, I was left there overnight waiting for a call back for a doctor. I live on my own, so I left my door unlocked because I thought I was going to die in my sleep. That was the kind of the reality. But again, was just told, stay at home, you'll be okay. It wasn't until week 9 of the illness that I actually saw someone. So by that point, I was referred to what were called the COVID hot hubs.
Let me just interrupt you 1 second, because you said this word fatigued. I think it's important for people to this is not being a little bit tired. We all get a little bit tired, and yeah. we all know what that is. But I've got a suspicion that what you're saying by fatigued is something that most people haven't experienced.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, to be honest, my fatigue got worse through the illness. So in those early stages, it was extreme tiredness. But fatigue for me now, my understanding of fatigue is crushing fatigue, where, you know, you have to decide, you know, sometimes you might be struggling to lift your toothbrush up or to brush your hair, to even get out of bed. You know, I grew my hair, so I've got longer hair than I used to, because the energy required to wash it every day, I just haven't had that. So I've had to make quite big lifestyle changes. I mean, that's kind of a minor one, changing my hair, but it's just an example. I've had to make quite big changes to be able to accommodate the fatigue, which has been, crushing. You know, there've been days where I just can't talk to anyone because I find that too tiring. Can't read because, again, it's just, you can't focus. Proper fatigue is crushing. You just can't do anything. But then there's the fatigue that's been with me all the time, which isn't crushing, but it dictates everything I do every day.
Okay. All right. So I interrupted there. I think you got to week 9.
Sorry, I can go for a full monologue about this. I mean, I have got a timeline I've written out just to help me, because one of the good things I did and recommend to others with the illness is I kept a diary. So all through the illness, I kept a diary of it, because, you know, when you get to, say, 18 months of the illness and you're seeing yet another medical professional, how on earth do you remember what happened to you in the first few weeks? It's important to have that diary. So that's how I'm kind of able to talk about it easily, because I've got the kind of chronological time log. But so, week 9 was when I first actually saw a medical professional, because for those, that first period, you know, you couldn't see anyone face to face. I'd spoken to my GP over the phone a few times, who was signing me off work. And she suspected I had COVID from the second week of the illness. So she kind of, it became suspected COVID infection from then on in my medical records. But at week 9, I went to A&E. I went to the hot hub. They then did a number of tests looking at my breathing, my heart rate, and they were really concerned. So they sent me straight to A&E for a lot of tests. Now, all of those tests pretty much came back as normal. And a lot of long COVID sufferers will relate to this. I mean, I've been to A&E 7 times through the illness with some very awful visits. But generally, each visit, you know, the stats have been normal and they haven't been able to identify what's going on. And that's a big problem with long COVID. No one's really sure of mechanisms. And a lot of these standardized tests in hospitals are coming back, not really showing or identifying what the issues are. Sure. But when I went to A&E in that 9th week, the A&E doctors had said they were seeing people like me who had contracted the illness, you know, a couple of months ago, but just weren't recovering. So they were starting to see that. And I'm fortunate in where I lived, I think, that I kind of felt validated that they were seeing others like me. My GP was telling me I'm seeing others like me, whereas I know through a lot of the long COVID communities on Facebook and, you know, other media, there are many people who simply just weren't believed that this was in their head. Whereas for me, throughout the illness, I've been taken seriously and people believe.
That's quite important.
Really important.
For your mental health, apart from the practicalities of getting something done, for your mental health as well. So at this point, and you mentioned you being in contact with other sufferers, were your symptoms the same? Well, two things. What were the symptoms? And were they the same as other people, or are symptoms at this point kind of quite different for different people, because for COVID, the symptoms are different for lots of people.
Yeah, and it's the same with long COVID. So for me, I still had the dry cough. I had the hoarse voice, and actually the hoarse voice was something that stayed with me through most of the illness. And actually, if I get pretty fatigued days now, I may be a bit hoarser than perhaps I used to be. But so the hoarse voice, I had earache. I haven't heard of many others having earache. That seemed to be kind of a lower level one. But the fever fever had kind of was on and off. I had some wheezing still, so that's quite common. The fatigue is common. I also had tonsil stones, so they're little like hard lumps. I've never even heard of them, never had them before. So in the kind of pits in your tonsils, you get like little debris can build up, and it apparently is really, really common. I've never had it, and it was, they would form, and then you feel like something stuck in your throat. And that was disgusting. I also had something called COVID toe, which again, I read about in the newspaper, and I was like, oh, I've got that, where it's essentially, it's like chilblains on your toes. Never had chilblains. But had a really red toe. And again, that's another really random long COVID and COVID symptom. But the brain fog is another one. And when I think brain fog's a bad word for it, really, it is, you know, it's cognitive dysfunction. Yeah, brain fog makes it sound quite a light issue, but, just not able to focus on a conversation, not able to remember things, not able to get the words out properly that you're thinking. That can be quite frustrating. I know some COVID sufferers, long COVID sufferers, have had it, you know, much worse than perhaps I did.
That sounds like it could be quite alarming, actually, you know, because it's one thing having a cough, but you start forgetting words and stuff, you know, this, you could think, oh, blimey, this seems
serious. Everything about this, I mean, I have had a terrifying 2 years, I mean, to put it mildly. I also had heart palpitations, which was pretty common. So some of my later A&E visits were, my heart rate, I'd be sitting at rest, my resting heart rate, because I was very fit before, was about 50. So my base resting heart rate, but I might just be sitting, not doing much, and my heart would be going at like 180 for no obvious reason. So my watch, which tracks my heart rate, would be giving me these high heart rate warnings, and my heart was just going crazy, and it was no obvious reason for it. And again, that's quite a common one, as well as dysautonomia, which any medic that's listening may correct me, but my understanding of it as a non-medic is, so if I was sitting down and then to stand up, my heart rate may increase by 30, 40 beats per minute as my body adjusts to the change in or the movement. And that can cause some dizziness as well. So these just really weird symptoms, but those ones are pretty common from what I understand in the community.
Okay. So from your experience in these early days, if you like, let's call it, when these symptoms became really bad, you got yourself down to hospital quickly. Like when your heart rate went crazy, you would think, right, I better go to A&E now. This is serious. And that happened a number of times.
Yeah, the worst time that happened was that was kind of in about week 16, where by that point I'd had tonsillitis, which is another thing. I'd had that for like 2 or 3 months, 2 months. And I went to A&E one day with my throat because I was really struggling to breathe, and my heart was a bit kind of palpitation-y, but not too much. And they gave me, I was put on a drip, and they gave me all sorts of medication to calm the tonsillitis down. And I had a bit of a fever and stuff. So I was discharged. And then the next day I woke up in the morning and I thought, oh, I feel a bit odd. I took the medication that they'd given me, And I got pins and needles in my hands and my legs. I started to feel quite queasy and dizzy, and my heart rate then started to ramp up, and it got up to 180 at rest. So I phoned 999 because I thought I was having a heart attack. I really thought I was going to die. And they said, we've got no ambulances available, because obviously, again, we are here, peak pandemic. Keep your phone line free and we'll call you back when we'll work out how we're going to get someone to you. So that was on my mobile. On my landline, I phoned my mum and dad essentially to say goodbye, because I really thought, I thought that was it. So then the ambulance crew phoned me back on the mobile and said, we've got you a taxi. So, like, surreal. They said, will you be able to get to the taxi? And I thought, well, I feel like I'm having a heart attack, but, I need to get to the hospital. So I literally crawled out of my flat into the lift, and, I was kind of crawling got to the taxi, had to queue up to get into A&E, because obviously you can't just walk into A&E. They've got to do your temperature and all these checks, but there was nowhere to sit down. And so, it's almost farcical, because my heart was going like crazy. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't hold things well, because I couldn't feel my hands. It was just awful. So anyway, fortunately, once I got into A&E, someone saw how unwell I was. And I was taken through to the resus area, which was quite scary. And my heart rate remained at 140 for the next couple of hours. And they just couldn't understand why. So they ran all of these blood tests, and they just couldn't identify what was causing me to be like this. And they did an ECG, and the blood test confirmed I wasn't having a heart attack. They supposed that I probably had a reaction to the medication that I'd had the day before in my previous visit to A&E. But actually, in recent months, or in the last year, I now understand the mechanisms of what happened to me then, but which I can tell you about later. But at the time, I had no idea what was happening, and they had no idea what was happening. Okay. Now, fortunately, I lived 5 minutes from the A&E department. So, I was in A&E or in the resus area for about 10, 12 hours that day. And then they said I could go home as long as I reported back the next morning. I think they probably didn't have a bed for me, to be fair, but because I was so close. And fortunately, even though it was locked down, I hadn't seen anyone I've been on my own for those, 3 months. One of my friends who lives in London, she just dropped everything. Well, I say dropped everything. It was locked down. She didn't have much on, but she had the spare keys to my flat, and she got herself over there. So once I got home, she was on the sofa waiting for me, because I felt like I needed someone to monitor me, or, sure, just in case anything happened in my sleep. That was one of the most terrifying experiences. That was not, sadly, the most terrifying. There was worse to come, but that was a pretty terrifying thing. And my parents, I don't think, will recover quite so well from obviously me phoning to say goodbye to them. But I really thought that was, because I'd been ill for so long, and psychologically, yeah, you think, oh God, finally, it's about to finish me off.
So this is horrible, hideous things to happen.
Yeah.
But at what point did you actually get a diagnosis of long COVID? Because no one really knew what on earth it was.
No. So I think it was probably maybe August, September time, and I may be wrong, but from my memory, maybe around then that long COVID became a thing. So it was someone on one of the long COVID support groups. I think it was Long COVID SOS, or one of those support groups. Someone coined the term long COVID. But on my kind of fit notes, on the notes that were signing me off to work, post-COVID syndrome, I think, was mentioned after about 3 months, so I guess 12 weeks. And I think now 12 weeks is kind of the diagnosis point. There just wasn't the terminology for it then.
Right. And the long COVID is now taken seriously and people know about it and can detect it? That was a question more than a statement, I think, really, Judith.
I think it's a bit of a postcode lottery to some extent. From what I've read, I think I'm probably very lucky in that I've been believed all the way through. I know a lot of people who've struggled to get the support. And at the time when I was at my most ill, I lived in central London where I had access to, lots of support. And even in, I think it was August, September time, I went to a post-COVID clinic. So it was, that was forerunner for the long COVID clinics. Right. It was set up for by the respiratory team of my local hospital. And they thought they were just going to have people who'd been in, intensive care going for respiratory support. Because obviously, I mean, I haven't talked about the lungs and things, but for many other people, they've had problems with their lungs and ongoing breathing issues. So the post-COVID clinic was set up to support them. And then they ended up with loads of people like me with these quite random symptoms also attending. I think from there, that's when the decision to start looking at these long COVID clinics happened. But again, not every hospital has a long COVID clinic. The treatment they offer is, it's obviously very good in places, but it's inconsistent. So I don't think there is consistency there. And you have to get a referral, which can take ages. And that obviously means your GP has to believe you. And there are still, amazingly, GPs and medics out there who still seem to think this is all in your mind. Isn't an actual thing. There's 1.7 million people who have long COVID, according to the ONS figures that were out this week. That's 2.7% of the population. And there are 74,000 people who've had long COVID longer than 2 years, like myself. So, this isn't small.
This is not insignificant. This is affecting a lot of people. So by definition, it will affect the NHS. They will have to take these people seriously and help them.
Absolutely. And obviously, a lot of the people who've had it for over 2 years are the first responders. I mean, I think I picked it. I spoke at a couple of conferences and things in the first week of March. So it's likely I picked it up at one of those conferences where there were lots of people together. But for many of the people who've been sick for longer than 2 years, they're the people who were on the front line before they had the adequate PPE. So these are, people working in hospitals, whatever their roles, in supermarkets, in the paramedics, all sorts of people in those frontline jobs who have been sick for that length of time.
So there are a lot of people who are sick now. Probably the world over, but certainly in the UK.
Oh yeah, the world, absolutely. This is a global problem. Yeah, absolutely.
So, but what is available for treatment? Is there treatment? Can anything be done, or does it depend on each person specifically, sort of what their symptoms are?
There is no set treatment for long COVID, quite simply, because the mechanisms aren't fully understood yet. There has been an injection of cash to researchers to look at the mechanisms, but there's no consensus as to what's causing it. There are a few theories, but obviously it's going to take time for treatments to emerge. What there is treatments for some of the symptoms. Sure. And myself, like many other long COVID patients, will have seen, many, many different people with an ologist at the end of their job title. So, I've seen cardiologists, rheumatologists, I've seen many ear, nose and throat specialists, given the specific nature of some of my issues. I've seen an allergist because I started having anaphylactic type shocks to foods and all sorts. I have seen a rheumatologist, I mentioned, and a neurologist. So
a lot of ologists.
You know, a list of separate, but these all separate disciplines, because there wasn't really a way of looking at the whole. You're having to kind of split off symptoms and look at them. Fortunately for me, though, I found a kind of generalist specialist in March last year. And for me, that was a turning point in my illness. So I found someone who's now essentially a long COVID specialist, really. But his background was in emergency medicine and general kind of health. And he has been treating some of my specific issues.
Okay. So, I mean, with that in mind, do you find yourself that you've had to change the way you live so as to keep it, change your lifestyle? You mentioned you were very fit. You know, do you presume, or maybe you do go for runs now, I don't know, but they're just shorter runs. You know, how have you changed your life to kind of deal with the long COVID?
Well, I suppose, yeah, long COVID changed my life. You know, it's unrecognisable really to what it was. So I mentioned briefly, I started having allergic reactions to things. So that was in February 2020. And that meant after more A&E visits and awfulness, I had to change my diet. So the consultant who I was seeing diagnosed me with something called mast cell activation syndrome, which is where your mast cells, which are in the immune system, just become overreactive. So they keep trying to fight everything. They're just becoming too, or your body's trying to fight all the time. So that diagnosis, it may have been triggered by long COVID. It may not have been, who knows. But as part of that, he put me on a range of drugs, so antihistamines and mast cell stabilizing drugs, but also I had to change my diet, which I had a really healthy diet beforehand, but this was a kind of very extreme low histamine diet. So you think about histamine is something, I mean, I have hay fever, so the pollen and trees out there at the moment that are coming out are bothering me a bit, but I didn't realize histamine is found in foods. So, and it was histamine that seemed to be causing me to react to stuff. So it wasn't necessarily about changing my diet to a really healthy one. It was about looking at a very long list of foods and choosing only foods that were low histamine. And for the first few months of that, I took it to very much the extreme, cutting out anything that was kind of medium or high histamine foods, which are things like, give you examples. So anything like processed sugary foods, they're all kind of high histamine. Alcohol, I mean, to be fair, I haven't drunk alcohol in well over 2 years now anyway, but things like pineapple, tomatoes, aubergine, they are all high histamine. Citrus fruits, high histamine. Nuts, so for me, nuts I probably won't have again, because they're the things that landed me in A&E with a swollen face. Right. Last year, peanuts, cashew nuts, things like that. So things, and actually I've always been a bit obsessed with gut health, and everyone's like, oh yeah, gut health, probiotics. Certain probiotics would give me high histamine reactions, and high histamine reaction for me was racing heart rate. My face swelled up for 2 months. So 2 months of last year, my face was swollen and my neck was swollen.
Earlier in the discussion, you were describing it, one trip to A&E, and you said, but this wasn't the scariest thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
So is the scariest thing that happened to you as a result of this aspect?
Yeah, exactly.
So if it's not too traumatic, can you give us a rundown on that?
Yeah, I can do. So it was, I mean, and actually what's worth saying, that all my A&E visits, looking back on them in hindsight, are all related, because that A&E visit I mentioned to you before and the medication, it's likely that that medication triggered a release of histamine in my body, which caused that reaction, because medication and stress can also release histamine. So these things are related, but it became more extreme in February last year when I basically went vegan towards the end of 2020, fairly vegan diet. So I was eating a lot more nuts and things because I was like, right, okay, I need to be really, really, really healthy. But actually a lot of the foods within that were setting off these reactions. And at first it was low level and I didn't notice. So yeah. I might eat something and feel a bit wheezy, or like my lips were tingling or my nose felt odd. And I didn't really think too much of it because obviously I've had been ill for goodness knows how long and I was used to random symptoms. But it got to the point I had like this dessert thing which contained cashew nuts and various other, I suppose, chemicals which set me off. And I went to bed not feeling great and I woke up at like 2 a.m. racing heart, unable, not able to breathe. And I thought, this is odd. And that time, because there are many times I didn't go to A&E, that time I thought, oh, I'm probably just having a panic attack. I say just, there is no just about panic attack.
No.
I thought I am probably having a panic attack. But 2 days later, same thing happened again. But this time I walked, I was having acupuncture and I'd recommend acupuncture to everyone. I'd gone to my acupuncture appointment, which I'd been having regularly. I'd had this dessert thing for lunch and I was lying on the acupuncture table and then suddenly the reaction hit. So she quickly removed all of the needles and phoned 999 and an ambulance came because, you know, my heart was going crazy. My mouth was swollen, my fingers.
The acupuncturist detected this. You didn't tell her, hang on, stop.
I told her because, and she was monitoring me, but I was like,
something's up. I need help now.
Yeah, something's up. And she could tell I was like, so yeah, fortunately she's a nurse as well as an acupuncturist. So that was helpful. Okay. She recognized when someone was going to need a kind of a histamine or antihistamine injection. So the team came from A&E. They didn't administer adrenaline because they felt I'd kind of calmed down enough, but they administered a strong shot of antihistamines and then took me to hospital. And that was, yeah, pretty scary. But it was the few weeks after that when my face actually started to swell up. So inside my mouth blistered, underneath my tongue was blistered. I had swelling under here. And I've actually got a scratch here because sometimes during the night, I still have some kind of tendency to scratch. And my, so it was all swollen around here. And that made eating very difficult. So it became, not only did I at that time not know what was setting me off and I didn't know what I could eat, it hurt to eat because my throat was so swollen, I couldn't swallow. And every time I tried to chew food, I was biting on the blisters in my mouth. So yeah, I was in agony. And I've had medical issues in the past. I've had lots of leg surgeries, but I have to say that month is the most agonizing thing that has ever happened. I mean, I was in pain for 2 months because it took 2 months for the swelling to kind of subside despite lots of medication and stuff. The doctors were like, well, unfortunately, it's your body reacting to some unknown thing. We can't do anything about it. You know, they tried me on steroids, all sorts. It's just
going to hurt all the time. It hurt more to eat. It hurt more to drink. Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible.
So I had a nice, the only thing, so temporary relief, I would lie on my sofa or in my bed with an ice pack on my face. And that's when I took up meditation. Because it's the only time I could kind of take myself out of my body, if that makes sense. So I would sometimes spend hours just listening to meditation tracks on Headspace, just to just kind of not be in my body for a bit because I was just in so much pain. And I couldn't take any painkillers because I was reacting to the painkillers. So, it was awful.
Right. So you've come through an awful lot. You have mentioned a couple of things. You've mentioned acupuncture. You've mentioned meditation. But if people are listening to this, I'm thinking, goodness me, this. I feel bad. Maybe I've got long COVID, not half as bad as Judith. But what advice has she got for me? Because she's been through the mill, and you're still going through it, really. But what advice can you give?
So I would say look out for the long COVID communities on Facebook and wherever. But also I follow like long COVID SOS, Body Politic and others on Instagram. And they post lots of the latest research and articles on long COVID. And that was good for me in the early days to see that I wasn't alone and see that these really random symptoms were quite, I say common, but you know, other people were going through them. But it also counter that with don't become obsessed with those sites, because if that's all you're thinking about, then obviously it can become very depressing. I also sought psychological help. So I had some counselling early on, probably around the time my face swelled up was the time I really needed some counselling, and that talking therapy really helped. And also keeping my diary. I've actually written a book, which whether anyone will publish it, I don't know, but I've been using, you know, every time I've had a little bit of energy and kind of wanted to do something I feel productive, I've been spending time writing. So I've written a book, and that for me was very cathartic and why I can talk about it now, because I feel like I processed what's happened to me. But acupuncture was really helpful. The diet I went on, while it was extreme at first, the low histamine diet, I've moderated that now. I can eat a lot more foods that I couldn't back then because I've recovered significantly. I'm no longer on any medication, which is fantastic. But the diet, so it's the Swiss interest group histamine intolerance, SIGA, or however you say it, have got a brilliant list of histamine in foods, which I found very helpful.
Right. But is the histamine problem, is that come across by quite a few other long COVID sufferers?
Yeah, so there's a lot of the forums are talking about mast cell activation syndrome. So not everyone. So some people have got more issues with their organs, so heart issues, lung issues. Fortunately, mine weren't permanently damaged. I have got damage to my thyroid from it, but I haven't got organ damage, which is good. But for many of us, we have got these mast cell issues. And I think for others who maybe haven't got the mast cell issues, just looking at their diet could be really helpful. And what really frustrated me, actually, I did a lot of talking about my illness on LinkedIn when I was first ill. And people were like, oh, you must take probiotics, you must take vitamins and all of this, all these suggestions. I would say, you know, if you can get yourself a medical professional to work with them about it, because I had all sorts of reactions to supplements and things. And to be fair, I was taking probiotics before I fell ill, and my gut health didn't help me as long COVID, did it? So, looking at your diet, really, really helpful. Talking about it is good if you can. I know I've got some friends with long COVID that can't actually. So what I've talked to you about today, I've got a friend who couldn't possibly go back to talking about it just yet, but they might in time.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. It was a very traumatic, it still is, you know, traumatic memories. So the fact that you can talk to me about that, because, you know, this is not years ago, this is a few months ago, essentially, stands for quite a lot, I think.
And I think also part of it's because of my job. So I've had to learn over the years working in health and wellbeing to be able to talk about or try and talk about things, not in a deadpan way, but kind of without letting too much emotion creep into your delivery of it. So I think some of that is practice, but that's not to say that I'd obviously haven't found it deeply upsetting. It's just that I am able to kind of talk about it. One recommendation, or we talked about exercise. If you don't mind if I just mention exercise, the thing that I have found, well, I say the thing I found most difficult actually is not having a life for 2 years. But the second thing I found most difficult is the exercise issue. So, you know, I was really fit before. And in fact, there is a cross trainer in the back of my...
I was wondering what that was. Room.
Yeah, it's my Bowflex Max. It's a machine for doing HIIT workouts. And I have not done a HIIT workout for well over 2 years because I simply can't. And I have tried to use it like really slowly for 5 minutes and it leaves me with a hangover. So imagine like, you know, you drank a bottle of wine. That's what it feels to me. Not that I would ever do that in previous life. That's how it feels to me the next day after using that for 5 minutes, like I drunk a bottle of wine the night before. Like, I do not feel good. So exercise has been a big problem. And I tried to push myself to go back to some form of exercise fairly early on in the illness, because I think we're kind of conditioned to not to push through it, but to think, oh, well, if I move a bit, it's going to give me. Well, how long COVID and how a lot of, you know, chronic fatigue, ME, it's not how those illnesses work. Exercise and graded exercise is not good. So I can do, so now what I can do is I can do Pilates. So as long as I keep my heart rate low, and I'm always sort of monitoring it, if I keep my heart rate low through a workout, I can do like Pilates, half an hour Pilates, 3-4 times a week. I'll do a weights workout once or twice a week, as long, again, if I'm keeping my heart rate below 100. I can go for walks, and in fact, my step count has improved significantly. But actually, I got to a point last month where I hit 7,000 steps a month again, where I started to feel a plateau and to feel kind of not great the day after. And I know I'm not, if I'm going to feel bad the day after, because I've had tinnitus, which I haven't mentioned, through a lot of the illness. And the tinnitus is literally my fatigue alarm bell. So if I've done a bit too much, the tinnitus will start ringing and I know the next day is going to be a tired day or fatigue day, and my brain fog will kick in. But fortunately now, my ability to recover is much quicker. So by the next day, normally the tinnitus lifts, the fog lifts, and I feel sort of more normal again. Right. So you're
learning how to handle it. I mean, I was going to ask, yeah, do you feel there's sort of light at the tunnel, but you are learning how to deal with this thing and get on with your life. And in fact, you're planning to go back to work soon. So do you feel in a better, I'm sure you feel in a better place than you did a few months ago, but do you feel positive?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, it was about maybe 3 months ago where I started to feel like myself again. Like, I felt like I'd come out of a dark cloud. Like, the brain fog for me really started to lift then. And once the brain fog lifted, my mood kind of improved and I'd be able to move more. I moved cities whilst being sick. So I'm back in Nottingham where I used to live many years ago, and I've got loads of friends here. So, you know, I've been out and about seeing people. I can't go out in the evening. I haven't had a night out for like 2 years, but that's something to look forward to. And the fact that I'm going back to work, I don't know really how that's going to affect my energy levels. But one of the reasons why I started kind of working on my book was actually to test how long I can spend at my computer. So just like over the months, I've had to keep testing and seeing where my new limits are about how far I can walk. I've had to sort of see where my new limits are and how far I can spend it having a conversation or at the computer. And, you know, it's not been a straight upward trajectory in terms of employment improvements. It's a bit of a roller coaster, but I am on an upward trajectory. And yeah, as my consultant said to me when I saw him a couple of weeks ago, you know, if I look where I am now, compared to a month ago, like the change is unbelievable. And my family can't believe how much better I am. In a year's time, hopefully I will be back on the Bowflex Max. And actually, frankly, if I'm not that wedded to it, I think my priorities have changed. You know, I'd like to be able to work a full day and be productive. But I'd like to live because, you know, my life has been changed unrecognizably, really. But I'd like to kind of live again and try and bring some positives from the horrible things that have happened.
Right. Judith, that sounds like a perfect point to end. So good luck with those positives. And good luck with your return to work. I hope everything goes very well. So thank you very much indeed for sharing your story.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Judith Grant, for telling your long COVID story and wishing you all the best for the rest of the COVID experience. Also, of course, many thanks to all you listeners. Now, I have a favour to ask you all. Now is the time to vote for the UK Health Radio Awards. Please vote for your favourite guest that you've heard on the show, and you can do that by going to the UK Health Radio homepage, that is ukhealthradio.com, and clicking on the vote button. You can also vote for your favourite presenter there. Pick me! There are 40-odd presenters, so you can pick any of them, but I would prefer it if you would pick me. So, right, thanks very much for doing that. ukhealthradio.com, go ahead and vote. Thank you!
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk. for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Mike Dill, thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.